Hello, and welcome to One Stop Co-op Shop, your one stop for board game news and reviews. This week, game designers Peter Gusis and Michael Kelly will review a cooperative game and have a related design discussion. Hey, I'm Peter, and I'm here with Mike.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Today, we're reviewing The Seventh Citadel.
Yes, and we're going to have a design discussion on action resolution systems and different ways to vary them up, even if your action resolution is the same.
Yeah, even if you have kind of a basic framework, how do you make it exciting? That would be a lot of fun. And Seven Citadel has been a favorite of mine recently. We'll see if Peter likes it as much.
Man, you love spoiling the reviews like at the beginning, like no buildup, no nothing. You're just like, here it is.
I mean, this one, I did a video like 3 weeks ago. A lot of people might already know how I feel, but we'll get into the details. But before we get to that, let's thank some of our amazing patrons. If you do not know, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/onestop. You get exclusive videos every month. We have, I think we have like 62 at this point, or more than that. And Peter and I are actually going to record another one doing a little bracket challenge ranking top adventure games, potentially including some of the Seventh Citadel, Seventh Continent games.
Yeah, we're having March Madness in April.
That's right. Oh, yeah, it is April. Whoops, we missed it. Never mind. Plan canceled. But also the Patreon goes to help us pay for all our hosting fees and the games we buy and equipment and all kinds of stuff. So we really appreciate you. And this month we want to thank Giovanni, Alexetto, and anonymous user. Now, that's their username. Anonymous user.
I mean, they don't want you to know.
That's right.
You know who it is? It's Colin. And I actually got a note from him.
Did you? What did he say?
And it says, "Hey guys, keep up the good work. I miss you. I wish I was there instead of meet me at the table. Baron's getting on my nerves."
These are lies. These are lies. But I do miss Colin too. All right. So yeah, thanks to our amazing patrons. And yeah, Peter, what's been on your table recently before we get to the actual review?
It's a little disappointing. So not a lot's been on my table, except for Seven Citadel. But I did a project. Well, so actually I did. I played two things. One, I played Spare Parts, which is our game that is going to be our next release. I'm super excited. You and I have done a lot of work on that lately, which is part of what's kept me from playing games. And I'm really excited. The game was fantastic as it was. And we've just changed it up just a little enough to modernize it just a little bit more. And I think really even just take it to that next level. It's that, you know, that next level of shine. So pretty excited about that. But the project I did was Marvel Crisis Protocol, which is a miniatures tabletop game, not cooperative. It's competitive. I've been getting ready to play that with my son. And I don't mean painting. I don't mean any of that stuff. But I just had to find all my stuff. I've gotten to the point where I've like collected so much crap over the years that like I have all these miniature games, none of which I play, by the way. We still play 40K every once in a while. But like I just had to figure out where all the stuff was. And here's where I'm going to give them props. Like, I lost all my cards. And that game is all about the cards. Like, you have these miniatures on the table. But each miniature has a stat card, basically, which has all their stuff on it. And like, I was able to find all of that online and reprint them all and reduce. Like, I thought my game was going to be worthless, basically. Now, I do understand you can get official ones from the company. But, you know, look, let's be honest. It's probably where I got it from is not a site that they would endorse out loud. But props on them for not shutting it down, because it is a big company. It's, you know, it's Atomic Mass, but it's part of the Asmodee group. And they could have shut it down and they didn't. Which makes me really happy, because honestly, I bought all this stuff and I'm like, man, this would suck if it's just like completely useless now, right? Because I lost these cards that are basically, you know, a lot of the core of what the action system in the game is. So I just want to give some props to Atomic Mass Games. And I remember really liking this one, so I'm super excited to get it back to the table.
Yeah, I vaguely remember when you played it a few times back when you first got it, talking about like how cinematic it was, like picking up things and swinging them into people and, you know, throwing them, you know, very, very comic book esque, like Hulk picks up a car and hurls it at someone. So, yeah, I hope you have fun.
Yeah, I mean, you can smash, right? Like, it's a superhero game. You should be able to smash. Like, you can smash the environment. You could throw things around. You could throw things into the environment and smash the environment by throwing people into it. Yeah, it's got a really a lot of cool stuff, but with a very simplistic action resolution system. Actually, it might be one we'll come back to at the end here and talk about how they change things up with their very simple dice-based action resolution system, but they really change it up based on the actions your character is doing. Actually, that'll really tie into our design discussion. So good on you, Mike. Good on you.
I knew it all the time. I'll talk about a few briefly. So Kinfire Chronicles, that's the campaign, sort of dungeon crawler, almost more boss battler, because it's all like boss battles plus some adventure aspects. But yeah, I've been, I want to finish this one up, or at least get deeper in the campaign to do a review of it, because they have another Kinfire, like, not Kinfire Chronicles, but another Kinfire world, like Kinfire universe game coming soon. I think it'd be nice to kind of time it for that. So I've been playing this with my sons, kind of like we did with Tales from the Red Dragon Inn. And they don't love it as much as Tales from the Red Dragon Inn. I certainly don't either, but it is fun. And I am slowly getting used to that initiative bag that none of us really like very much, but it's not the worst thing in the world. But yeah, we're I think, 5 missions in out of 22, so we're probably not going to finish, but I want to at least get like to the 10 waypoint, you know, and see all the game, the main things the game has to offer. So that's one. No, I also... Oh, go ahead.
The action resolution system, because I know Kinfire Delve, which we reviewed maybe this year or the end of last year, yeah. It uses a very similar action resolution system, right? Where you're playing cards to like overcome challenges. Is that my memory correct on that?
Yes. Yeah, so it's interesting because, yeah, it's very interesting to play Kinfire Delve, a game that came later than Kinfire Chronicles, because in a lot of ways, I would say Kinfire Chronicles is much simpler. All the cards you play, pretty much, except for like some special actions and stuff, they're all pretty much attacks, just like one range or melee attacks. And they right. just have like how much damage they do and maybe some other effects. And then the cards other people play are just plus damage or like let you draw or discard a card or give you some more defense. And that's kind of it. And there's no die rolls. There's no like randomization. It's just like damage and boosting damage. So It's a fine system. I'm not complaining about it, but comparing it to Kinfire Delve, where even the powers when you're helping somebody are quite varied, and then your powers are like highly varied. I think the cards are a bit more interesting in Kinfire Delve. But of course, Kinfire Chronicles is like a boss battler, and you're like also moving around a map and stuff. So it makes sense that a game that is entirely card based would have a bit more going on with the cards, right?
Yeah, I mean, we should definitely get into a design discussion about that. I know we've like nibbled around the periphery of that, but never exactly comparing. Like, I don't think we ever did Kinfire Chronicles 2. So maybe at some point I'll borrow that from you. We can do that and then have that discussion. I think another one, Ascension and Ascension Tactics, is similar, where you almost have to make it more simple because when you have a board introduced, like you said, you almost have to make it more simple because you got so many other things to pay attention to, ranges and things like that, that I think you can get away with on a card game, not going as deep with the, or with a card game, you want the powers to be more deep.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, and then other ones, this one I'll be really quick. I played Sleeping Gods Primeval Peril. It's kind of like it was a PNP that Ryan LeCout did after the original Sleeping Gods. And then he expanded it a bit. And it was like kind of like a bonus or something else you could buy during the Distant Skies pre-order, the new one with the airplanes we already covered. So this is very short. I actually recorded it for the channel and Patreon, and the entire playthrough, even like with me talking and describing, was, I think, 2.5 hours. And I beat the entire thing. But it's cool. It's interesting. If you ever get a chance to play it, Peter, we can talk about this. I do think it's sort of the Goldilocks thing, where I had problems with the original Sleeping Gods because it was too... Some parts were too punishing and like frustrating. And then the new Sleeping Gods, we talked about this in the review, as you get like into the latter half of the campaign, it's way too easy. This one right. felt like, because it was short, it kind of hit that just right thing. Like, my characters felt awesome by the end, but it finished like 15 minutes later, you know? So like, I got awesome and then I won, you know what I mean? Instead of in Distant Skies, it's like you get awesome and then you play for another 5 hours. So it was interesting.
If I remember to talk about it, I'll talk about it at the end here. I was a little worried about that with Seven Citadel, honestly, because at one point I'm like, I got like 10 items over here. What am I supposed to do? Because you're limited by weight, but a lot of the items I had didn't have any weight at all. So I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to have a stack of like 60 cards by the end of this campaign? And I'll talk a little bit about that if you remind me, like when we get into cards. But yeah, no, it did not end up working out that way. But it's tough, man. Like we said, the longer the campaign goes, the harder and harder it is to balance for those end game. Gloomhaven tried to fix that a little bit by making it so that you have to retire characters after a certain amount of time. So once you leveled up a certain amount, then you'd have to start over. And Gloomhaven also did a good job because they gave you a lot of different levels of difficulty you could go to.
Absolutely.
And so they gave you some ways to get around it that way. Like, okay, we made the game too easy at level 6. Well, just play level 7 and pretend level 6 never happened, right? Or it's too hard at level 6 for you, go down to level 5 and it'll be fine.
Yes, no, I think we did a really nice job. But yeah, so Primeval Peril was pretty cool. And then the last one I want to mention briefly, I did a video of this, is called Harrow County. I really want to play this with you and Jerry. This is a faction-based, asymmetric, kind of like area control combat, but like not really area control. And it does have a solo mode. It's a really wonky solo mode. Like, I really enjoy it, but it's not something I would, like, highly recommend the game for. But the competitive play is awesome. So I do want to play this with you at some point. But let's stop there. We want to get into the meat of the podcast, which is our review of The Seven Citadel. So this is...
But actually, one more thing. Oh, sorry.
Sorry,
before we get into that. Yeah, I just remembered. Jamie Stegmaier reached out to us because I had a correction to do from last week. And I do want to make sure that we have the most accurate information out there. And I mentioned at one point that when they did the big box, that they had extra content in there. And I was wrong about that. That was definitely Terraforming Mars, which not only give you the big box, but they give you extra cards and things along with it. They did not do that for, what was it, Scythe?
Yeah,
I think Scythe was
big
one.
Box, yeah.
Yeah, they did not have that. They just had the box itself. So if you wanted a better storage solution, you could get that. But there was no extra content included with that. And actually, you know, getting back to last week's design discussion, I think Viticulture did a great job of breaking it up exactly how I said last week. So Viticulture originally had an original game and then Tuscany expansion. But what they did when they made the Essential Edition, they did not actually add any content to it. So if you had the original, it's just as good. Maybe they upgraded some cards or updated some cards, things like that. But what they did is put the best of the expansions in the base game. So it's a little bit more than the base game, but they're like, no, this is really, if you only get one thing, this is how you should play it. And then they gave you the option to get those other expansions in the Essential Edition Tuscany. So all the expansions were still available to people, but they really gave you a better first game experience and then still let you, you know, if you want more content, then they offered that more content. So I think that was a really good example of how I would prefer to see it going in the future rather than one just giant box of stuff.
Now, I will say, of course, breaking things up into different like SKUs and like dividing things up is going to be a really expensive proposition. Stonemaier is big enough to be able to do it, but not like every publisher can be like, hey, we'll also offer this little pack of like extra things. But yeah, that's really cool that they did that.
But it's only two boxes, right? It's one core box and one expansion.
Sure. But all right, that's a little follow-up from last week, or 2 weeks ago, whenever we did this. So
2 weeks ago, yeah.
But now we're doing The Seventh Citadel. So this is the follow-up to The Seventh Continent, although it is, as far as I'm aware, a completely different world and setting. This is like a fantasy setting. It's a world where this giant war happened between these wizards, necro-druids, I think they're called, who would, like, make evil plants, and they were fighting against...
Well, they're not evil. Those were the good guys, right? They were saving the worms.
Yeah, they were saving... Whatever. Everyone's evil. They basically enslaved us, like, our characters at the beginning of the game. And then they're fighting against these burrowers, like, these giant worms that are, like, eating up the world and causing earthquakes and stuff. And you're thrust into this post-apocalyptic setting, and you go through these different campaigns.
I can cover the mechanics.
Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
Mechanics is all about tests. Literally, everything you want to do is a test. You want to move a space, you take a test. You want to like explore something, you flip over a card, you take a test. The tests are all done the same way. Basically, there's a number in blue that tells you how many cards you must draw at minimum. And then there is a number of stars that you need to achieve. It might be 0 and 0, which means you don't draw any cards and you don't need any successes. It might be you need to draw 7 cards and need no successes. It might be you need to draw 2 cards and you need 5 successes. Usually the number of cards you draw is a minimum, but then there are also times where there's a chain on it, which means that that is the maximum number of cards you are allowed to include in the test. And then there are cards you can do to boost the test, things like that. But it's really about that. And then each test uses, like, it has a different symbol on it. And then you may have cards that help you with that symbol. So they might give you extra stars. They might increase the chain value by one, so you can use additional cards as part of the test. But really, it's all about doing these tests, exploring this world. It is campaign-based, so there's definitely going to be different missions telling you what the objectives are. But that's really the majority of what you're doing. I think we're going to cover the specifics when we get into our review, but that's really a lot of what the game's about. And it is, I will say, for those of you who played Seventh Continent, it is much more story-based, which is something, you know, Mike talked about the Necrodruids versus the Worm Masters or whatever, and the story does come out. Not just that story, but there's a lot of other story, which I didn't feel Seventh Continent had. That's why when you said that they may or may not be connected, I don't know what the story at all was, except you were looking for these idols in Seventh Continent, so, like, I have no idea if the worlds were the same or not.
No, they weren't. Yeah, there were worms, but no, Seventh Continent was set on, like, Earth, like, decades ago, but it was set on Earth, and you were just supposed to have, like, I think it was, like, a continent that's, like, hidden near, like, Antarctica, or, like, you just magically appear there. This is definitely a fantasy-like setting. All right, so we'll get into our top five things about the Seven Citadel. If you haven't listened to the show before, we'll go from five to one. Least important, although still important enough to mention, to most important. And I'll start off. My number five is the world and the general narrative and story of the campaigns. So the negative for this one, because this is generally a pro for me, the negative potentially is that they do have, like, this little dialogue book you go into when you're talking to characters, and then you have, like, a little campaign book you have to refer to. And sometimes, you know, going to the dialogue book can break up the flow of the game, you know, if you have to, like, go through several dialogue sections. But besides that, I think this is a cool world. In my video review, I compared it to the Fallout series, even though it's, like, fantasy and not technological. A lot of the things of, like, building your settlement and, like, going out and trying to find help reminded me a lot of, especially, like, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, where you had, like, these settlements in a post-apocalyptic area and you were trying to, like, find help to sustain them and help them survive and, like, get enough food and get enough water. So, yeah, I think the story is well written. I think the setting is very unique and interesting, and it goes pretty deep, and they have, like, little glossaries you can look up, like, terms from things and stuff.
Most of that you do at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, most of those glossary terms are, like, in the first couple paragraphs. It's like, there's these five-star things. You might want to look up what that means.
But hey, it's better than Agamonia, right, Peter? Where they're, like, throwing, like, 50 terms at you every 5 seconds and you don't know what the hell they are.
Yes.
At least here it defines it for you.
Well, and there's only, like, 10 or 15 of them, and they keep repeating them. And I'm going to be honest, that's my number five as well. So I'll just continue on with what you're saying. And yeah, no, I am not someone who likes story games. I am not someone. I mean, this is the kind of game, because you're reading everything. You're reading the backs of cards, then you're flipping them over. You're looking for, like, symbols on the front of cards. You're then reading a paragraph here, reading a paragraph there. There's story going into it. There's story coming out. And you know what? I actually liked it here. And I'm not sure why. It's an interesting enough setting. They repeat stuff enough. You're seeing the same characters and the same kind of stuff over and over. The bad guys are pretty clear what they're doing and where they're coming from. And again, this is the benefit of a somewhat linear story. Now, there are branching paths, like, based on your success or failure, but not really. It's just the conclusion is a little bit branched at the end. But for me, I don't know what it is. This world, you're right. It's really something that's getting me in. And part of it might be that every time you read something, you then flip over the card and there's a visual that goes along with it. And don't get me wrong, I think this would make it, and this isn't one of my points, so I'm going to mention it here. I think it would make it really bad for me at multiplayer because of that. I think solo is really good because I'm going to read something, then I'm going to flip over the card, and it's going to reinforce that picture. The one thing you and I have talked about, I think when I read stuff, I don't always get that visual. And here, I'll read it, and I flip it, and it just reinforces it with a visual. And it really, like, for whatever reason, it's brought me in.
Now, I do want to be clear, just in case you haven't actually seen the game, while you are reading a lot, it is not Sleeping Gods, it is not Lands of Galzir, it's not or Role Player Adventures. It's not like a game where you are, like, constantly reading entire pages of text, and that's, like, 90% of the game. A lot of this here is, like, with the cards and the tests and things, and, like, very quick little paragraphs, or even, sometimes you'll just walk for a while and, like, see things, but not really read much at all, so I don't know. Do you agree with that, Peter? It's not like a book game. It's like quick little readings mostly.
It isn't, but it is a lot of reading, right? If you compare the amount of time you're reading compared to the amount of time you're doing everything else, I'd say it's about equal.
50-50?
Because 50-50.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because tests take 2 seconds and the paragraphs, well, at least for me, take longer to read, right? So, I mean, maybe if you're a faster reader. But, like, every card, I don't know if you read the back, but I do.
I don't know, like, I do. But what I'm saying, though, is, like, Sleeping Gods or something like that is, like, 85% reading. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you are reading a book and sometimes playing, you know, kind of playing a game, that kind of thing.
There's more game here than in those. And I think that's why I appreciate the story, because you are getting it in snippets. Mm-hmm. And, like, each thing is just a little bit. You're getting a little bit here, a little bit there. It may reinforce stuff you know or whatever else. And then, let's be honest, I think it's also because I'm still in the earlier plays where you've played a little bit more than me. Mm-hmm. And so when I visit card 136 for the fourth time, I'm not reading that card. Right. So I think the reading actually might go down the longer you play it, or you don't have to. You can read it again, you know, to remind yourself of the place. I don't know. But I could see myself reading less and playing more as the game goes on.
No, that's fair. All right. So my number four is the threats, which are like the campaigns you play. So there are two in the base game, and then there's an expansion that came with a third. And they have already announced they're going to do a new printing with at least one more threat. So we'll have, eventually, if you buy enough expansions, four or more threats. And I only got to play through one of them to finish. And then I played around a little bit with the other one. I didn't play the expansion one yet. But this is another pro for me. I think it's great. Let me give some caveats. The intro, you always play the same intro. And while there is some randomization in it, the fact that you have to like go through the intro again might be annoying to some people. And Peter mentioned it is pretty linear. These campaigns are pretty linear. There is a little bit of branching. Sometimes you'll even play a different mission, but that's, at least in the stuff that I played, pretty rare. Like, there aren't too many branches. So each of the one campaign I finished was 20 to 30 hours of play. And that was like with me playing solo pretty quickly. So it'd probably be longer for a group. So even in the base game, you're getting like 40 to 60 hours, even if you don't replay anything and just play it once. But yeah, I like the structure here, especially compared to the Seventh Continent, which I did enjoy, but did feel a little meandering and like too open world sometimes. I like the scenario structure and how they're like, okay, go do this. And they give you generally a pretty clear direction. Things will change, like some locations will be different based on the mission you're doing. You have like gradients of success, but you fail forward. I don't know. I just really like the structure here. I've never been as much of a fan as of open world adventure games as I am of scenario-based adventure games with clearer objectives. It's just more bite-sized. It makes sessions feel more like valuable to me, you know, like, okay, I accomplished something in these 2 hours. So I think I think this is really good. I like the structure.
What makes you feel more varied too, right? Because you're not doing the same thing every mission. Every mission gives you a new objective, and I haven't played nearly as many as you have. But I do feel like I'm doing something different, even though I'm exploring the same worlds. And that, I mean, we'll talk about this later, but they do change things up even in the world you've already explored. So it's almost like a living, evolving world because of that.
Yeah. And something that's cool is that the campaigns kind of, They onboard you, tutorialize you well, because besides the intro, like the first mission will be like, hey, go in this direction. The next mission is like, hey, now go south. The next mission is like, hey, now go north. So you sort of naturally learn about your environment. And then, you know, later on, you're like going all over the place. You don't even know where to go sometimes. And I didn't play the expansion campaign, but it looks like from the description of it that it's like, okay, gloves off. We expect you to have played both of the other scenarios to completion. Go across the entire world, crazy stuff. So I'm like, that's pretty exciting, you know, as like a culminating thing once you finish the other stuff.
Well, and I don't know if they do this, but they should tell you to play them in a certain order because of that, because I do think they introduce the world slowly but surely. But as you get to playing it, you're going to get to know the maps a little bit. The more you play it and you're like, oh, I remember seeing that a couple missions ago or whatever else, which is kind of cool because you are exploring this world and this you become part of it. Now, because of that, I'm curious if you put it away for 3 months and then try to go back, is it going to be hard to join in like one of those later campaigns or a later mission? It's like, oh, man. Where was that again? Or which way do I got to go? Now, they do have a world map. And I will say this is important, as Mike pointed out to me, because I was calling him earlier today. I'm like, I have no idea where to find what I'm looking for in this mission. And Mike's like, dude, it tells you right in the book which way to go. It says, go this direction. I'm like, I'm looking at the book. It does not tell me to go in any direction. And then he's like, look, it tells you to go toward this thing. And I'm like, well, I don't know where that thing is. He's like, it's on a map. And he's right. Like, they give you several maps. They give it to you in your campaign book. They give it to you like this fold out map, which you can then like even like draw, not draw on. You're like drawing cards that are like hand drawn maps that you can put in this map. Like, there are plenty of places to see what they're talking about. But yeah, if you don't do that, that was my one caveat. I got a little frustrated at that point. I'm like, I don't know what to do or where to go. And then I reread stuff. And after Mike kind of pointed out to me, I was like, oh, okay, now it's clear. So I was getting a little frustrated, but the Mike's like, you're going to have to restart the mission. I'm like, or you're going to have to fail it or whatever. I'm like, no, isn't there a card that lets you like run from one side of the map to the other? And there is. So the good news is, even though I was literally 100% in the wrong direction, I never had to heal myself throughout the game, like more than like the free healings you get. And I never had to like reset stuff. Now, it was still a pretty early mission in the campaign, so I'm glad of that. But I did get a little lost, but I was able to find my way back on track and I found everything I needed. And I did succeed at the mission, maximum success, even with all that. So I was pretty happy.
Now, it was funny because we didn't talk about our seventh continent experience for comparison. Peter famously only played seventh continent once in a dark bar with like five people, which is not, none of that is a suggested way to play seventh continent. And they never, you had to flip over like the quest card and it would give you a map and told you like basically which direction to go. They never looked at that. So Peter has a bad experience with seventh series games and maps. This time wasn't nearly as bad, right?
Well, it wasn't, because instead of just being frustrated, I called you and like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, instead of getting too far down the road. The nice part is, I guess, with as many videos and stuff as up now, you'll definitely be able to find it. But yeah, maps are important. You know, just a heads up. maps are important. It's going to tell you what to do and where to go. All right, but let's get into my number four, which is the deck building and leveling. And actually, this could have been number one, potentially. I mean, there's so much good stuff in this game and really innovative stuff, which is funny because I think a lot of people are going to compare it to Seven Continent, which it is. And we'll do that ourselves at the end. But I really like the way you did this. You're going to progress throughout the game. You get these Hope Reborn cards, and they'll let you do things like heal yourself if you're like in a bad way. They can just get some hit points back, or you can use it to level up your city, town, but character as well, because each of you have your own personal decks in this game, unlike Seventh Continent where you just had one deck for everybody. And there are ways to, like, you're going to be basically checking off this like spider web of different skills. Some of them are building up the town, so you can do stuff, you know, you can use Hope Reborn to, you know, check off a building spot and then like select a building that you want to build in your town. You could check off something that lets you add two new cards to your deck or remove cards from your deck. So there is a deck building aspect to making your deck more and more specialized, or you can just, I guess, go willy-nilly and do whatever you want and make it less specialized. Although certainly you don't want to do that because, you know, each of the cards, in addition to having stars on them, will give you like icons like fists or magic symbols or whatever else. And then other cards will trigger off that. Like for each fist you have in your test result, you know, get additional stars or whatever else. So you definitely want to specialize where your cards match your items, match your skills, things like that. So yeah, no, I really like how this works. I feel like the progression is pretty steady, especially at the beginning. Now, maybe it slows down as you get further and further in, but I definitely feel like each mission I'm getting a few new cool things, which makes me happy. So I really like the deck building and leveling that happens, even in this very simplified system.
Yeah, now my number three is the upgrading as well. I agree with everything Peter said. I'll add on that you also get like allies, you get a ton of items, and those can really change your options and tests quite a bit and give you kind of cool different tools to get. And it also just makes you feel like you're getting more powerful. I'll give caveats again because I love the upgrading, but I do think the campaign is a bit of a rich get richer thing, because if you level up more if you do better in the missions generally.
Yeah.
And then if you've leveled up more, you have more tools to do better in the missions. You know, Arkham Horror LCG does that too. This is kind of going back to what we said earlier about like the challenge of balancing these kind of games. You know, like for a tighter mechanical experience, you want an adventure game where the better you do, the worse you are, or the harder the game gets. But clearly that's like the opposite of what you want in all these kind of games. So it's tough to do. So that's just a minor concern. And then also I will say that I could foresee, again, I didn't play through a whole second campaign yet, but I could foresee you kind of leveling up the city in a similar way. Some cards seem like obviously better to get early on, and some cards seem like obviously easier to wait until later. Not a big deal, because you're also leveling up your deck in very different ways, and you're getting very different items, you're getting very different allies and encounters and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like a minor complaint that you're probably going to level up your city, your settlement somewhat similarly.
Well, and you get four different characters as well, all with different like main icons that they have too. And then when you're choosing to update grade your deck, you're drawing four random cards and choosing two to add to it.
Yeah,
so there's definitely a lot of variation, but you're right. The town is always going to be at least the option to level up the same.
Yeah.
At least for now. You never know.
Yeah, no, that for sure. And I mean, you know, like I think in Kingdom Death Monster, I often upgrade my settlement in somewhat similar paths, you know? And so I don't think this is a big deal. I just think it's worth mentioning.
Right.
All right, but how about your number three, Peter?
My number three is the action resolution system. And this is basically what I said you were doing over and over in the game. So is this your number two, right?
It's my number two. Yeah, damn it.
All right. So I'm going to say as minimal as possible, but and we're going to cover this a lot in the design discussion. So I think we both keep it as minimal as possible, but it is a super simple system. Like I said, you draw a certain number of cards. You can always choose to draw more. I'm going to focus on that part of it. That's to me, one of the coolest parts of it. And then if you miss anything, I'll kind of throw it in after yours, but you get to choose as many cards as you want. You can make the test as safe or unsafe as you want by drawing more cards, and then you're trying to get stars. On the cards, they'll have stars at the bottom. Some have a full star. Some will have half stars. Some will have both. And then you need a right and a left half to like form another star. So like, it's all about the number of stars you get, but it's interesting how they pair that with like the symbols on the top and the special power that they have. I just think with the minimum amount of like stuff that's involved in this action resolution, how interesting it becomes. And I'll let you take it away from there, Mike.
Yeah, fully agree. I love this action resolution system. I like that it's also very thematic, because like the things you use to boost yourself, the skills you play to make your tests better, like the allies you bring in. Like, let's say, I'm not saying there's something that happens in the game, but let's say I'm trying to sing a wild antelope to sleep. You know, and I have like a bard with me, and I have a kazoo, and they all like give bonuses, you know, and well, I guess kazoo wouldn't really put you to sleep, would it? But it just like, if I had to tell a little story about what each test was and what happened in that test, it would not be hard to do. And I think that's pretty impressive with such a, in many ways, abstract system like this. Now, I do love this system. I think it's great. I think it is an improvement for me over Seventh Continent, where they often limited how many cards you could draw. What they've done instead here is that you have chains, as Peter mentioned, where you're limited in how many cards you can use. But a cool thing is that you're only limited in how many stars you get from those cards. You'll get a lot of like abilities and stuff as you level up. That'll be like, hey, fist icons will help you do awesome on this test. And those get used whether or not the chains are there. So you like aren't limited in kind of your combos and special abilities, which I think is great. That being said, it is still going to frustrate people. Like sometimes you'll have tests that you just should not be able to like succeed at, and you'll beat your head against the wall like trying to succeed at it. Sometimes you flip like eight cards and still don't get what you wanted, you know, so it is still slightly random. There are frustration points here, but yeah, I love this system. What did I miss, Peter?
So I would say I've been pretty lucky maybe, and that I succeeded. I don't think I've ever failed a test. Now, maybe I've drawn 6, 7, 8 cards to pass the test, knowing that I have chains of two. But a lot of times going into the test, you know, at least a pretty good approximation of what your chances are. I think the worst part about this is probably that earlier in the game, you're less likely to succeed as your deck is less specialized and as you have less skills. But every time you move a space, not only do you flip a card to move, but you actually get to add that card to your hand. And then if your hand's full, then you can even replace some of the cards in your hand. Well, one of the cards, at least in my deck, lets you add a star. So I almost always have that card in my hand because I don't use it unless I absolutely have to, of course. But the other part of that is there's a card that lets you retrieve a card from your discard pile by discarding it. So a lot of times I will use that card to disc to get the star card back again. Now, I said I think I would always do that when we talked like offline, but I don't do that. Like this last game, I knew I was on the opposite side of the map I needed to be. So I used it to retrieve my running card, which lets me move for two card discard. I can move anywhere on the map that I already have revealed. So there is a lot of good that this system has. And I don't know. It just, for me, the other thing is there's a lot of ways to mitigate luck. So not only cards you have in your hand, which you can choose to play after you see the results of the test, but also gear that you get. And you'll be able to use that gear, like you have to gear up at the beginning of the fight. So you choose which gear you want to use. Now, one of the cool things is that gear does break sometimes. So there is a little bit of fluctuation. It's not always the same throughout the entire game. So you may lose or gain stuff, which I like. That's comes from Blood Bowl. Like I just love not only getting more powerful, but sometimes losing some of that. I could see it being frustrating for some though. But the part I love is that you can use cards in hand even after you've seen the result of the test and then decide what you want to add in as well. So I do think there's a lot of mitigation. So I have not failed too many tests, but I could certainly see if you're failing over and over. And as you said, like if you're not getting as much level ups because you're not doing as well in the campaign, I could see that getting frustrating on that side as well.
Well, and to be honest, I didn't fail very many tests either. I do compare it favorably to something like Agamonia. I think this is kind of similar in that Agamonia has like no necessarily terrible results on the dice. And the one that like forces you to spend stamina to get successes is often actually a better result because you can get two successes from one result. So I like games like this where in a way it's like, how much are you willing to spend of a resource instead of like you just suck and you fail most of the time? You know what I mean?
Sure. Yep. So my number two is the town building and the leveling. Is that your number one?
Well, no, I remember I combined that together in three. So we already talked about it a bit. Yeah, but go ahead and give your spin on it.
Yeah. I mean, I love this spider web system. I love that every mission you're getting some of these Hope Reborn cards, like during the mission, you can even level up like in the middle of the mission, which not many games let you level up as you're going. But it's also, like I said, it's a way of healing as well. Like you can get 10 health back by discarding this card. So do you want it for permanent upgrades later in the campaign? Or do you need that 10 health? I held on to one of my cards. I'll be honest. Cause I was like, oh man, like I explored the entire wrong side of the map. And so, like, I saved that Hope Reborn card if I needed it for healing, but I was really hoping not to have to use it so I could then. But, you know, you're pushing your luck in some situations like that, too. And this is a lot of push your luck in this game. Like, how far can I go? How few cards can I use to still achieve the results that I'm looking for and the success I'm looking for? But the town building, the leveling, you can level up your town so you can, like, repair weapons between missions so you can get new swords earlier in the game. You can level up, you're leveling up your like food production, your culture production, your knowledge production. Like all these things are really neat. And like you said, maybe you're going to do the same thing over and over, but I could also see the campaign pushing you in different directions. Mm-hmm. Hey, this campaign, they're just always attacking you. So you're going to focus on all the things that level up the defense of your citadel, right? Maybe food isn't as important in this one and you're going to focus on something else, or maybe knowledge is more important on this mission as well. And like the leveling is so easy to do. I mean, you compared it a little bit to like Kingdom Death Monster or I forget the Greek god ones now.
Aeon Trespass
Odyssey. Like those are so convoluted. I usually hate this part of games. Even Shadows of Brimstone, people love that part. They're usually so convoluted. This is so easy. You literally get a level up card and it's like check a spot and then like either level up your deck, level up the town, whatever else. It's like so easy to do. And it's just right there. Everything is written on the cards or written on the board. There's very little times I'm looking up stuff in a rule book. Now, the icons, there are some keywords, but usually they're in one of the two quick references, which I'm still not sure why there's one on the back of the rule book and then one in your leaflet as well. And they have different stuff on them, but whatever. I mean, that's a minor little quibble, but yeah, like everything is so straightforward. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about this game is like a lot of times I don't have questions. I just get a card and I just like do what it says. And the tests are always easy because they're always the same. So I'm not thinking about the test. I'm thinking about the story and what I want to do for the test. Anyway, I drifted off in a lot of different directions there, but bottom line, this is one of the few games where I actually enjoy the town building and the leveling of the town. because you're also leveling your character at the same time. So really enjoy it. Really well done.
All right, yeah, my number one, and this is actually my favorite thing from Seventh Continent as well, and I love it here too, is the exploration system and kind of the map system. So everything is cards. You're putting out these square cards. They'll tell you like what number cards are next to them. But first there'll be like a little fog exploration card and you have to like reveal that, and that's randomized. But you get to learn the map. You get to feel like you know your environment in a fun way. And this one does make it much easier because it gives you that big map. Even from the beginning, you have a general sense of like where major things are. And then like as you kind of flesh it out, you'll have more knowledge. But I do imagine it'd be easier for me to come back to this game than a lot of these other big adventure games, because I can be like, oh yeah, okay, I remember this general stuff. So I love that. The excitement, I mean, like, really, like, I don't know. I get very excited, like, flipping these new cards down, putting these new cards down, and, oh, what's here? What's here? And as I get farther and farther from home and things get more and more dangerous, like, it's hectic, it's tense, and I just think it's great. Now, they do something very interesting in this one they didn't do in Seven of the Continent, or they kind of did, but not as much in Seven of the Continent, where they sort of gate the locations a little bit. And what I mean by that is to explore different, like, locations farther from the Citadel, your starting point, it'll be more expensive. You have to spend more cards to do it unless you're what's called your ground shiver, which is like this little thing you use to explore, unless that's leveled up to a certain point. So in a way, they're like, hey, don't go too far this way. Hey, don't go too far this way until you get deeper into the campaign and we level this thing up for you. I wasn't sure how to feel about that. I ended up liking it a lot because the campaign does branch out more later and let you explore more later. But certainly early on, it was nice for the game to kind of be like, hey, don't go there yet, dude. You know, like maybe go one card, but don't go any farther than that. That's not where you're supposed to be. You know, so
Well,
go ahead.
And it fooled me, though. Like that was part of it, because I had explored like this certain direction on one of the missions. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not supposed to go to these places yet because my ground shiver is not good enough. So I ended up exploring the entire other way just to find out, no, really, you can go one or two spaces like outside. And yes, there's a big penalty. You got to discard 7 cards or something out of your like 24 card deck or whatever. But like, so there is a penalty for doing it. But at the same time, I guess we didn't talk about why losing cards is important also.
Yeah, your cards are not quite your life. It's like your stamina. And then how they do it in this one is you have a certain amount of life. It's divided between players, so you have more if you're playing solo. And at any time, you can spend cards because your deck is going down and getting discarded. You don't get to shuffle it for free. At any time, you can spend life to shuffle some of those cards back in. So You're kind of like having this ebb and flow, but you want to watch your life because you also take life points from like damage and those kind of things. So I think it works really well. I think it does add some tension to like the tests and like we said, how much you kind of dig into complete tests. And we didn't talk about co-op at all, but I'll throw in a quick mention here before Peter does his number one. The co-op, I think, works really well. I'm not sure if I want to play like 4-player, but I can totally see me, Peter, and Jerry playing this 3-player. And I've played a 2-player and it was fine. They make it cheaper to move to where somebody else is. So if you stay together, you kind of save a bit more time and like don't have to spend as much stuff. You can't carry as much stuff. And you're of course going to have your class cards in your deck. So the game very much encourages you to like focus. So like, I might be like, hey, Peter, get over here, dude. I'm fighting something. You need to kick its butt. The one part that might be weird for some people is that technically there is no round or turn structure. You just do an action and then it's time to do another action. And it's time to do another action. And in solo, that who cares? But if you're playing 2 or 3 or 4 player, technically, I could act forever until I was dead. And then Peter could act forever. Now, you're not going to do that. But it is sort of a weird thing. And not every group is going to love that. You know, you might one person might have more to do for a while the others kind of watch. So it is something to be aware of, I think.
Yeah, but every test, I don't know. I've never played multiplayer. My son was watching me play today. He's like, this game looks cool. Cause he's like, is this made by the same people that make Aeon Trespass Odyssey? Cause he loved that board exploration. And I mean, this game, that's all it is, right? It's all just about
better. Cause Aeon Trespass Odyssey,
way better.
Aeon Trespass Odyssey, the locations don't matter. It's like this island might as well be that island most of the time.
Yes. He really liked that card based exploring. And that is my number one point. Similar to yours, it's the cards. The cards make up everything. And just, this is a system we've kind of been using in spare parts design for the last, like, I don't know, 5-7 years, however long we've been working on the game. You saw it a little bit in Flame and Fang as well, where you're like going through cards. It's like, okay, get card 4 and that'll do something else. They go further with making it part of the map as well. But I really think it's cool how you can use this system. And they do a really good job of this, where they might have card 159, but they may have three of them. And that might mean you shuffle them all together and pick one at random. Or it might mean one of the card 159s might be used only for mission 3 of campaign 1 or whatever. And it'll have a little picture in the on the back of the card as well next to it saying, hey, if you're on this mission, use this card instead of the normal one. And that's how the world evolves and kind of changes as you go along, which is just really neat. Like every time you go to the same tile, it's not going to be the same. Most of the time it will be, but not every time. And sometimes there's a gold card, which means you have to get rid of all the other cards of 159 before you can draw that gold card. And hey, look, they're all gone. Now draw the gold 159. And they do things like banish cards, meaning take them out of the campaign forever. You'll never see them again. But a lot of times when you discard it, you just discard it to this one deck. I think it's called the past or something, which you then like put back in the deck at the end of the game. Now, that's probably the one pain point for me at this game, or at least the biggest pain point. My gosh, at the end of the game, trying to put all these cards back, like, because you got like 40 of them, I would guess at least that it's like, and ones, it's not even like they try to keep them together. They're not like, okay, put card 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 back. It's card 5, 257, 126, 14. You know what I mean? It's like, all over the place where these cards are. So that for me, like Mike called me to like do the review and I'm like, sorry, dude, I'm putting the cards back. Like I was literally like I'm cleaning up after the campaign. Sorry. So that's maybe the one negative. It's unlike, but I guess the good news about that is there's no pain at the beginning. Like you pull out the game and you basically start playing.
Yeah. You have like one card, like you're here. Go.
Go. But then you're adding cards, cards go into the past, and then you just got to sort it out at the end. And it's pretty easy, quote unquote, easy to clean up and put away and then get back to where you were. But at the same time, I will say is bigger than you think it's going to be at the end of the day. It takes up a lot of table space. Like when you first start, you're like, oh, this is really tiny. There's just one card on the board. Well, it's very different when you have 40 of these little square cards all over the board. Plus you have your own personal tableau area gets bigger and bigger as the game goes on. So certainly I will say it's a little bit of a table hog considering what it looks like it's going to be at the beginning, considering everything's cards. But I do think it's genius how they have this card system where you're just basically, you know, it's like draw card this, draw card that, and it all works and it all goes together. I haven't seen really inconsistencies with like anything leading to a broken spot. I mean, it feels like there would be a lot of work to go into the system. They use it really cleverly as well. Like, I just like what they do with the cards in general because the game is, I mean, basically 99% cards. Like, yeah, you got 4 dice, but you don't even roll them most of the time. Yes, you do sometimes, but like usually it's just like, oh, you need this many successes. All right, count it down. You'll have to do it several times. Just what they do with the cards with such a simple system. And don't get me wrong, it's very similar to Seventh Continent that way, but I just feel like they've mastered it here and they've done a really good job of making it smooth and just all kind of work together. I never feel like I'm doing work to play the game. And I feel like it's just because of all the things they do with these cards.
All right. Yeah. So I'll get into my final thoughts. I absolutely adore this game. If you watch my 5 and 5 review, this was one of the rare all pro games. Now, I hope you heard in the podcast, I had caveats for every single one. It's not going to be a pro for everybody, each of those points. But for me, I love the Seventh Continent, but it had a lot of pain points. This does not. It pretty much gets, you know, except for what Peter said, like finding the cards and sorting them and putting them away and that kind of stuff. I love this test resolution system. I love the exploration. I love how they've done the campaign. Like, if you like narrative campaign adventure games, I think this is one of the best I've ever played. I adore it. And Peter, you didn't get it far enough into the campaign, but I love how they respect the player's time a lot. So let me give you two examples that, Peter, you would see like as you play the next few missions.
Sure.
One example, there was one mission I was far as hell away. I was so far from the beginning, and I was like, oh my God, why do I have to walk all the way back? And I completed my objective, and they were like, hey, here's a card. At any time, use this card to head back home for free and end the mission. And I was like, heck yeah, fast travel. Like, not all the time, because the game does need that tension. But I was like, this is exactly what I needed. Like, they read my mind. Like, somebody play tested was like, I'm tired. And they were like, here you go, teleport card. So that was great.
Let's be honest. Even if you walk back, and let's say it's 9 cards away, right? You literally just need to flip 9 cards off the top of your deck.
It wasn't 9 cards. Here. 9 cards. But you're not wrong. Yeah, I mean, moving is fast once you've explored a lot. And then the other one is, in later missions, they'll be like, hey, you have to go over here and then do something really cool there. And, you know, in your mind, you're thinking, oh, my God, I got to freaking go. Like, I have to walk the same ways I've walked 50 times before. And they're like, nope, mission starts there. You're already there. Get back to the Citadel and do some other cool stuff while you're there. And it's like they change up like the routine of going out and seeing the same locations over and over. So I don't know. I just really think they thought through, like, they worked on this game for years. And I think they did an amazing job. The fact that Agamemnon and Seven Citadel came out in the same year, like maybe two of my favorite like adventure-ish like exploration games ever, is wild to me. And I love this game so much.
Yeah, this game's going to be above Agamemnon for me at the end of the year. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know if it's going to be my number one game at the end of the year, but it's got a shot. So far, it's probably the best game that we played this year. I just really enjoy it. And this is from somebody who hated Seventh Continent. Now, do I think everybody's going to have the same reaction? No. I don't like story games, and I didn't like Seventh Continent. This should not work for me at all. Like, I don't know why it does, but I'll be honest, this replaces, and this might seem like a weird one for you, but for me, as a solo game, this replaces, what's the Chip Theory game, the solo one that just came out last year with the gladiators?
Oh, Hoplomachus Victorum.
Hoplomachus Victorum, because I get the same kind of feel. Like, I'm exploring around little areas. I'm leveling up as I'm going along. This one is much more narrative-based and much more story-based. And I think because of that, it's going to keep me much more interested for much longer. Hoplomachus, I get bored because it's the same thing over and over. I'm just building up my deck. I'm building up my fighting squad. I'm trying to kill stuff. But it has a lot of the same things I like there as far as gaining new stuff. Sometimes you lose the stuff and you have to re-get it back again or get something else cool to replace it. So I don't know. I like leveling campaign games so much. And I think the way it does it, the way it doles it out to you, the way it like come back for a little more. And again, I'm not very far in. So this could fall off because it does for a lot of games, right? Where later on, it just takes you so much more to level up. And there's, you know, your deck's already pretty honed, so the stuff you're getting isn't as exciting anymore. Maybe it'll get there for me, but it hasn't yet. And, you know, we can only give snapshots of where we're at, and that's why we do the year-end review and where everything is. But where this game is right now, I am so excited to keep playing. And the other thing I loved about Hoplomachus was easy to put down on the table, play it some, and, like, do that one more turn thing. You have no idea how many times I played this game, and I'm like, oh, I just want to flip over one more card. Oh, that's so cool. What's the next card? Like, and I'll just flip over the next one. Like, it just kept me engaged over and over. And this is not a game I should like. Now, I'm going to put my caveat here. And you said you didn't have a lot of negatives. I don't want to play this game multiplayer. I'll play it with one other person. You said you'd play it with me and Jerry. I don't want to do that. Like, I don't, because I think the thing that's keeping me engaged is reading that text and then flipping it over and seeing the picture, right? Like, I like how invested I am in that. And I think if somebody else is reading the story, I'm going to tend to zone out a little bit more. And I think I wouldn't be as invested. I think the story is good enough here and there's enough cool stuff going on that I want to be kind of like an unlock game or something like that. Like, I want to be looking at every card. You're looking for hidden numbers sometimes too. And again, it's not the worst thing in the world if you don't find them, right? Like, it's not going to make or break your day, but it's cool to like do that kind of stuff. And so for me, I do think this is going to be mostly a solo game. If I'm choosing between this and Agamemnon and it's multiplayer, like all of us, I think I'd want to play Agamemnon. But this is a game I'd much rather play. I like it better, but with that caveat that I'm probably not going to like it multiplayer. I did not get a chance to play it multiplayer, so I don't know. But just my experience with Seventh Continent just kind of leads me to believe that I would feel left out of a lot of stuff if I did play multiplayer.
Now, I can see what you mean. And it is funny that we did like Mage Knight and then this, you know, in 2 weeks in a row. Nation of Heroes is a very different game, you know, in terms of like what you're doing. But I think both games reward the solo player kind of having the time to just sit down and focus and move at their own pace in very different ways. This one to let you read and explore and like experience things. Mage Knight to, you know, calculate how I'm going to kill this goblin with 15 different cards. So it's a different solo focus, but I think both like kind of reward that time investment for the solo player.
Yeah, Mage Knight and Hoplomachus both felt very mechanical and tactical, and I like that part of them. This, I want to explore more because I want to complete that story. I want to see what's behind that next flip card. I want to do what's next. And I'm not an exploration person. Like, I love Planet Unknown, and I never had to explore anything. I just wanted to solve the puzzle in that game. For whatever reason, this game, the story and the puzzle is just enough and a good enough combination that it keeps me engaged. And I don't know what they're doing, and I hope they keep doing it throughout the campaign and through the next campaign, because I'm really enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I mean, I will say for the campaign you're in, I think you're really going to like where the story goes, because some things are predictable and some of them like go in really surprising directions. I won't say any more than that. All right, so yeah, a huge recommend for both of us, especially I did not, Peter, I got to be honest, I did not think you'd be that positive, but I'm happy you are because I love this one too.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd be that positive either, honestly. I was not necessarily looking forward to this because I had such a bad experience with Seventh Continent. And just even the stuff I read and heard about Seventh Continent, like, I liked Seventh Continent at first. I think their skills check system, which they did in that and they do in here, is really clever. I just got bored with it there. But here, again, it's not all about the skill checks. It's about the stories. And I just feel like the cards are more interesting and the equipment's more interesting. And like figuring out how to get through it and how to do that skill check is more interesting. And like, I don't know, the push your luck here is more interesting to me than it is in most games, even though, you know, it's just like draw five cards or whatever. But I get to keep one of them, right? So the more cards I draw, yeah, the weaker I'm going to get as far as health goes, but I'm going to get to keep one of those cards and sometimes, or I'm going to get to use the icons on all those cards. So yeah, what do I think I need to do? And I get to hone my deck. So yeah, no, I just, all of it is better here for me than in Seventh Continent, like all of it.
All right. So Peter just mentioned a lot of things related to skill tests. So let's get into that. A lot of games use very quick resolution skill tests to, you know, determine how you do in things. Of course, that's a very common thing in adventure games. But as Peter mentioned at the start, which game did you bring up, Peter, that also, the Marvel Crisis Protocol, right?
Crisis Protocol. Yeah. So there you have like your character has like five skills, but you're always rolling a certain number of dice. It's like roll this many dice and then get successes. And defense rolls against you. So it's an opposed test there because it's a competitive game. But like if I attack them on this type, their defense is different than when I attack them on a different type. But not only am I attacking to do damage there, but I'm attacking to get these energy points, which I build up to do super combos and things like that. So because you get like a couple actions each turn, like, all right, I want to do this to build up, get more energy, and then I'm going to combo it with this power, which lets me do something else. And the fact that each skill check is the same means I don't have to think about how to resolve it, right? Same with Seventh Continent. I don't have to think about how to resolve this. Fighting somebody is resolved the exact same way as climbing a mountain. And I actually thought it was a huge con in Seventh Continent because I got bored with it after a while. But I think it just needs to be tactical enough and interesting enough to make it worthwhile. Because again, in Marvel Crisis Protocol, I'm usually building up power, and like the more successful I am, the more power I get to build. And then I get to do this cooler thing and like, okay, I was planning on doing this, but I got more power than I thought I would. So now I can do this, or, oh, I didn't get enough power to do that. So what am I going to do now? It changes the tactical decisions. And even though it's just rolling dice and getting results, like those results matter and they affect what my next thing is. A lot of games, I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to say this statement. We'll figure out if it's true. A lot of games, I feel like you do something, but you could play in your next three things because one thing doesn't chain into the next thing. And I really like when they're really good with these action resolution systems. Like one action affects what I'm going to do next. Like I think Gloomhaven sold me on the fact that like maybe I'll change what I'm doing on the top and the bottom, but like I never did. I don't think in all my hundreds of games of Gloomhaven, I ever said, I'm going to use the bottom of this card and the top of this card. Oh no, they did something so unexpected that I'm going to use the bottom of. If anything, it's like, oh no, they're all dead. So, like, I can't do anything on the bottom or the top.
I agree with you that I pretty much never switch bottom and top of Gloomhaven. What I would do is switch to the basic action, especially for the movement. I'd be like, oh, the cool thing I was going to do on the bottom doesn't apply anymore. I'll just walk to,
Right.
So what I want to get into with these things is what I think makes more interesting skill test systems, why they're more interesting, is having triggers, categories, icons.
Yes.
But you got to find the right way to integrate them smoothly so it's not overwhelming for the player. So let me give a counter example first. Sentinels of the Multiverse is not really doing a skill test system. And I'm really talking about the original Sentinels of the Multiverse, not as much Definitive. They got rid of some of the stuff in Definitive. But Sentinels was like, hey, guess how many attack types there are? And I don't even know how many there are. And I play a lot of Sentinels, like 15.
Right.
It's like sonic damage, lightning damage, fire damage, water damage. And it's like, okay, it's cool to have all those differentiated like things. But then when it's like, okay, so this ongoing card is +2 to fire damage, and this ongoing defense is -1 to aqua damage, but this guy's attacking with shock damage, so none of that even applies, I think can create a lot of mental clutter, like kind of fog between you and the test. So I think you have to find the balance of either limiting those things, like the number of categories or the number of icons, or limiting how many the player has to pay attention to or care about at a time.
That's the key, I feel like.
Yeah, so like a lot of games, like a Magic the Gathering kind of thing, like card games, will have like a certain number of colors, you know, or Marvel Champions has like the different aspects, you know, and like something might like call out, you know, like white cards do this or black cards do this. That's a pretty simple way to do it. But then you look at like Seven Citadel, they have, I don't know, 20 different skill tests, but first of all, they're grouped, like there's like 5 different physical ones, and almost every card that helps with something physical will help with all of them. Like if this card helps me jump, it also helps me climb, that kind of thing. And, you know, you don't have a billion abilities. You can only have up to 3 or 4 cards in your hand. You can only have X number of items. That shrinks down even more when you're playing with more players. So realistically, you don't have too many things that apply usually, and you only have to look at the icons that apply. Another way to do it is like a lot of games will have tokens with icons on them, but you only pull a certain number of tokens. I'm thinking of like the Chaos Bag from Arkham LCG. You'll have like die faces that are unique die faces, but you just look, you know, if you roll the dice and you get these 2 die faces, you just check if any of your things trigger off that. Like something like Sword and Sorcery or some of the Simon games, you know, like, oh, I got a fire result and my weapon fire result is +3 damage. It makes a basic systems feel more thematic and feel more unique. And I'm doing cool stuff that like uses my cards or uses my items, but I don't have a lot of mental overhead to make it work, to like figure out what bonuses I'm getting and what applies to this test versus that test. So like Peter said, I know how the test works. It's still quick to resolve, but it feels different. So I don't get bored with it.
I think I was worried at first that every character was going to feel the same. And just playing through a few different missions, I've already seen that that's not true. Because you're like, I had a real easy time doing this thing. I was like, yeah, that was a pain in the butt. You're like, but every time I got in a fight, this was a pain. I was like, oh yeah, I didn't have problems with my fights, right? Because I chose a more fighty character. So I do think it's interesting and clever how they did it in Seventh Citadel. And I was torn on this because I actually... Seventh Continent bothered me because it used one skill system for everything. So what are your thoughts on that? Using one skill check system for everything versus combat, it works this way. But when I'm doing an interaction, I do a different skill. Because a lot of the Arkham games do that, right?
Yeah.
Like they do combat one way, but then you get to a skill check and it's a completely different system.
Well, I would say they don't tend to do it a different way. Because certainly the LCG does it the same way in combat and not. And pretty much like the Eldritch Horror, the Arkham Horrors, they're all roll dice. 5s or 6s do X. You know what I mean? Like you do damage.
But aren't they like when you're doing a test, you like use your brain skill. Oh, I got 3 in that skill.
Yeah, so that's still the same for combat. Your weapon will be like you're using your fist skill and your +2 from the weapon and you're rolling. I mean, the big difference is often in tests, it's like if you get at least 1 success, you're good. Whereas in combat, it's like each success is a damage and you want to like get as many as possible. So it's a little different. But no, I definitely prefer things like that where it is a consistent rule set. But again, if things change it up, if I have items, if I have skills that are pretty easy to parse through, or role player adventures. Remember, like you do like those little dice checks. It's the same dice check if I'm sneaking or if I'm fighting. Well, actually, that is one where combat is, again, a little different, but all your skills work the same. Like,
right.
You know, the combat goes over multiple rounds, but skill tests are once. I don't mind that kind of thing, a minor division, as long as it's only like two or three ways to do it. I don't want to.
Well, it's true here, too, right? So that's one of the things I want to say. And that's what I think is genius about this game, because in Seventh Continent, I got bored with the skill checks. Here, it feels like they change them up enough, even though you're literally doing the same thing. Draw this many cards, go for this many successes. But for whatever reason, like combat's a little different because like you're trying to like change, roll down this dice number. And if you succeed, sometimes it does something really good. And if you fail, it does something completely different. And you have a chance to run away and like by discarding more cards. And it's all about using your cards effectively. I don't know. I think I like the mitigation system here. So to answer my own question, I guess, I did not think I was going to like the same system for both. But what I like is I don't have to fight with the systems. Yes, at first it takes a minute to learn it, but once I've got it, I'm doing the same thing, even though there might be slight variations on it. I know how to do the skill check, but because they did it in such a good way, it doesn't feel repetitive. So in my mind, I used to think, so I'll give a perfect example from a game I love. And again, not skill checks here, but like Oathsworn. You have very different games. You're doing very different things when you're fighting than when you're building your town and things like that. And I don't like the fact that I'm basically having to learn two or three different rule sets depending on what part of the game I'm at. Here, I like that whatever I'm doing, it's going to be a skill check. Even if it's draw zero cards, need zero stars, right? It uses the same format to tell me to read passage 17 as it does to kill a wombat. You know what I mean? Like, so for me, that consistency that it keeps me out of the rule book, it really feels good. And I haven't played it that much where I feel like I'd have to be a master at it to do what I'm doing. And, you know, once you get the system, it speeds up gameplay. And I feel like I'm always making decisions or reading something rather than trying to figure out how to do an action.
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say that now this is brought up is I do think at the same time as all the stuff we're saying, it can be true. Sometimes it's not even about the skill check. Sometimes I think the feeling of variety or repetitiveness is about all the stuff around the skill check.
Okay.
You know, so like Seven Citadel, I think we both agreed the scenarios are really well done. There's like variety in what they're asking you to do. You have cool rewards for almost every check. Something new is discovered. Something new happens. I don't know. If you took the exact same Seven Citadel system, but you only got to like read a new story thing or discover something new in the map every like 10 checks, every 15 checks, I think you might get kind of dull, you know?
For me, I think that's why Seventh Continent felt dull.
Sure.
Seventh Continent,
you didn't know where you were going. And even when you look at the map and know where to go, you still often in Seventh Continent are just wandering for long periods. You don't have a clear objective. You sometimes have to like go back and forth over the same ground. So yeah, like if I've taken five skill checks and it's the same, I'm just drawing some cards again, but none of them like reward me with progress in a way that feels meaningful or something new to discover, I think that is going to be annoying, you know? And
well, that's one of the cool parts is you can level up as you're going with Seventh Citadel and you're drawing cards, you're adding them to your deck, you're building up your city. And I like that like web system. And again, it's a little bit away from, it's more back to Seven Citadel and away from our action resolution thing. But I like that you have a choice between making yourself better and then making like the town better for like other rewards down the road, or just leveling up the food you need, which might make the objective for the mission easier to accomplish, right? So there's a lot of little choices and they're all meaningful. And unlike some games, yes, some of it's obfuscated, but I think they do a good enough job of like, hey, if you go here, once you get to seven knowledge, you can do something else. And I'm like, oh man, now I really want to get to seven knowledge. So I'm like, maybe I'll focus some time on building up my knowledge so I can come back here, which I know there's something like new to explore here. So I think they give you enough breadcrumbs where, yes, it's a little bit like, yeah, I don't know. Do I need food? Do I need defense? Like, what's important? But then at the end of the day, they're like, but if you get this thing, you could get something cool here. It's like, all right, well, maybe I'll do that then.
Yeah, and I'll give it a few more counterexamples again. I think like the crisis management games that have like simple resolution systems. So like, you know, or the Arkham Horrors and Eldritch Horrors. Yes, it's kind of an adventure game, but also you're kind of like trying to make sure the gates are shut or not too many monsters build up or not too much doom accumulates. And those games, I think, can... The dice rolling can be super fun, but I've had games of those where, like, I just kept on doing the same kind of test over and over again. Okay, I'm just going to keep on killing monsters. Or, like, we saw that in the Marvel game, Marvel Dagger.
Yeah.
It would get a little boring sometimes because you're just, like, keep on, especially when things are going well and you just keep on winning. Or Tainted Grail. Tainted Grail's combat system, I would not call a simple resolution system. Like, that's a full-on, like, card play, like... You know, like combo,
chaining one thing to the combo, next.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But just as like kind of a, you know, still it's a system. And in Tainted Grail, you know, Kings of Ruin, the newer set compared to the older one, in Kings of Ruin, it felt like they had fewer combats and new important stuff would happen in the story and the exploration between each combat. In the old Tainted Grail, you had to grind so much for resources, like running out of food, running out of stuff to keep the like the statues lit, that I'd have to go and like fight the dudes in the forest to get food like over and over. And then I was like, this combat sucks after a while. The system didn't change. The mechanics are no different. But I think if the trappings of your game are repetitive and boring, even the coolest, like awesome resolution system is going to feel repetitive because why am I doing it? You know, like, what is the point if nothing changes in the game state in my, like, experience of the rest of the game because of that resolution system?
Yeah, and I even think of, like, Marvel Champions. Every character in Marvel Champions, you're doing basically the same stuff. You're paying cards from your hand to play cards from your hand. Some of them go into play, and they build up over time. But every time I play that game, and the reason I like it is even though, again, the system is very simple, how to do something is very simple, I have the same cards, maybe, and I'm using the same deck over and over, but the scenario itself changes, and I can change my character as well between games, and they all feel different, even using a very simple system. So the more I think about this, and again, it's the same thing. I can either fight with that system, or I can get rid of threat with that system. Like, it's the same stuff, it just uses different words. It's like, do this much damage or remove this much threat. And I guess I'm even thinking now about X-Men and Marvel United. That is the same thing, right? It's very simple actions, very simple repetitive stuff. I think for you and me, there wasn't enough variety between characters, and they almost stripped it down too much. And I know a lot of people love that game, so I'm not saying it's a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. By the way, I don't even think we ever reviewed that, but we'll move on. But and again, because we didn't love it, right? I think you have to love a game to play it as many times as we need to do these reviews. But like that game, they really stripped it down almost too much. And here, the action resolution system's just as simple. But what they do is the trappings around it are interesting enough. You can add items. You can play cards from your hands. Like certain icons do certain things, but none of it's complicated, but it adds up to something that's more satisfying. Marvel Champions, same thing. I'm doing something simple, paying two cards from my hand to play something that costs that much. And like it does a certain effect, but the choices within there are more satisfying and interesting than play a card to move two spaces or do two damage or whatever else. Like, which seemed, and yes, the order is important. There's a lot of things that could be interesting there, but I feel like characters just didn't feel differentiated enough. And here I feel like if I played the mage next time, I was like the fighter this time, there's a mage, there's like a rogue character. I feel like they're all going to feel a little bit different in what they're doing, even if they're trying to get past the same challenges. And it's important. It's like almost like a DM in a role-playing game. It's important for the game to make everything important enough that you can feel different and some things are going to be easier and harder for you.
All right. So Seven Citadel, huge recommend. If you like these kind of games, I think it's a great one to look at. and some suggestions for making your resolution systems more interesting and better. And I guess the stuff around the resolution system is consistently engaging.
Well, I think that's the important part. Yeah, I mean, it's the same advice we come back to a lot. It's don't make the mechanics the game. Make the mechanics get out of the way to make the game more fun. You know what I mean? So like using a same action resolution system makes it more fun because I can focus on those outside elements, as you pointed out.
I mean, unless your game is a 10 to 15 minute filler and then the mechanics can be the game, and that's great because who cares? It's already done playing by the time that they get bored.
Yes. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us and we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us again for the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Check out our YouTube channel at One Stop Co-op Shop. Also, join us for games and discussion on our Discord channel. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/onestop or leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another top five list. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
I have some actions I want to resolve. First, I want to go to the bathroom. Next, I want to record our top bracket challenge for April.
Yeah, let's do it. You have a +2 peach to your pee check because of your water bottle upgrade.
Oh, crap. I didn't discard enough cards and I peed my pants. All right, let's record.